Once upon a time, there was an old inventor. An ingenious man who could create solutions to any kinds of problems. That was until a girl comes to him, a girl who's on the edge of becoming a woman. She comes to him and she says, "Listen, I got a problem. I got a problem and I can't imagine you can fix it." He says, "Well, I'm good at solving all kinds of problems. What is it you're struggling with?" She says, "Oh, it's awful. It's awful. I live right under a 6-lane motorway. It's so noisy. I lie in bed at night and all I can hear is the of the big lorries and the trucks and all the cars going overhead. And it's the same during the day, it's just even more of them then. I want somehow to not be able to hear all those things. I want you to make them go away. Can you do that? Can you do that?" And he scratches his head and he says, "Well, why don't you show me where you live?" And she takes him back. She takes him back to her house and, oh, it's pandemonium there. It's so noisy. It's not just the road going overhead. There's a baby crying and there's a toddler crying. And it's so noisy. You can see how that girl can't even think straight. And he stands back and he looks at the whole scene. And he says, "Give me a couple of weeks." And he goes away. He goes away and he tinkers and he tinkers. And before long, he's got a really good idea. And then he's got another good idea and he works them, he puts them together and he keeps on working and working until at last he's created a pair of headphones for her. A pair of headphones, and he takes it to her place and she puts them on and it's like all the noise goes away. All the noise goes away. She can't hear the toddler. She can't hear the baby. The road is just a distant whoosh. She's very, very happy with the inventor. She says, thank you so much. And he goes away. He goes away thinking he's done a good job. But it's a couple of weeks later. That same girl, she comes back. She comes back to his inventing workshop. She's got a very strained look on her face. In fact, it's the same look that she had when she first came. And he thinks to himself, "What now? What now? I thought I'd solved your problem." And she sits down in front of him. She sits down in front of him and she says, "Listen, it's very strange and it's quite disturbing, I have to say. Soon as I couldn't hear the baby and as soon as I couldn't hear the toddler. Soon as I couldn't really hear much of the traffic either. Why? I started to realise there's other things that I'm hearing that are causing me suffering." The inventor says, "What? You can't hear anything with those things on." She said, "No, I can. It's the voices in my head. The voices in my head that sound like my own thoughts, that sound like me. But they say the most horrible things. They say the most horrible things about anything I think of. That I can't do this right, that I did that wrong, that I'm stupid, that I'll never get on in life, that I'll never manage to accomplish anything, that this went wrong and that went wrong and that was a bad idea and I'll probably never change." And the inventor, he listened to her and he thought to himself that he probably had the same kind of thoughts as well. And he said, "Well, I don't think I can do much about that. I think we all have voices like that. I can't really change your thoughts. That's just the thoughts in your head, Missy. I can't make those go away." And she looked at him. She looked at him like you might look at someone that you really, really trusted, that you really believed could make things better for you, like a daughter would look at her father. She said, "Please, please, you fixed it once. Can't you fix it again for me?" And she turns away before he can reason with her, before he can say, "But I can't make your thoughts go away." And then she was gone. And there was just this echoing silence in his workshop, filled with her expectations, shortly followed by his own sense of inferiority and inadequacy that he could ever live up to them. Well, he's well and truly stumped. He thinks a bit, he tinkers a little bit. The truth is, he actually can't come up with anything. It's too esoteric. It's too difficult. How do you stop a person's thoughts? How do you do that? And then one evening when he's just tinkering away and eventually throws down his screwdriver, puts aside what it was he was working on, there comes into his mind the face of a man he hasn't thought about for a long time. An old, crazy inventor who he knew briefly at the very beginning of his career, who had a significant impact on him. His face flashes up. And our friend at once knows he has to go see him. And before long, even though it's late, he's trudging through the city to the very edges of that place, to the very edges of the city where this guy lives, in really something of a hovel, something of a shack. And it smells bad in there. And it doesn't look very nice either. And the old guy is sitting there with a big bulbous nose and a large belly. And by now, he's lost most of his hair, which the inventor, our friend, hadn't really remembered. But he really does look worse for wear, although happy with it. And there he is sitting, and he remembers our friend. He says, "Come in, I haven't seen you for a long time. What's bothering you?" "Bothering me? Well, yes, you got a look on your face like someone who can't come up with an invention. What is it?" He tells the guy the whole story. And at the end of it, the old crazy guy, he laughs and he laughs and he laughs. And he says, "There's no invention that can fix that. But I do have a story." "A story?" says the inventor. "Yes," says the old guy. And this is the story he then told. Once upon a time, there was a white deer. A white deer that lived high, high up in the mountains. That it was said, if you caught one glimpse of it, you would know forever your true self. You'd know forever your true nature. And after that, you would be utterly changed. And because of this, many young people particularly, they would go up the mountain fearless and full of courage, full of determination and bravado, and they'd come down a few weeks, sometimes months later, starving, parched, swearing that there was no such thing as the white deer, that this was a myth, that there was nothing up there, just a bunch of other normal coloured deer. But there was one time a young woman. And she so wanted to know her true self that when she heard about the white deer, she told all her friends, all her relatives, "I am going up the mountain. And I will not come down until I've found the white deer." And the friends, they try to dissuade her. The relatives, they try and figure out ways they can stop her. But she's unstoppable. She says, I'm not coming back until I've found out my true self, until I've found out who I really am. And so she packs a bag with some tools for surviving up there. She knows this might be a long haul, so she packs a bag. She gets some instruction in how to survive way up there in the altitudes. And she sets off. And it's really clear to her, there is no way back down as the same person she is now. Well, she looks and she searches and she walks and she walks and she walks. She travels a great distance, and all the time she's looking for deer, she's looking for tracks in the ground. She's spotting the deer on the hillsides, on the mountainsides. But they're all a speckled brown sort, and some of them are quite pretty, but none of them are white, that's for sure. And she keeps on travelling, and she keeps on travelling. And after a while, she's kind of exhausted. After a while, she's getting hungry, she's getting thirsty. And that's when her training comes in, and she starts getting her tools out and making what she needs to make in order to hunt, in order to fish, in order to gather what food she needs, digging it up from the ground or gathering it from special places. She was well trained, you see, well informed. So she had a little bit more time on her hands. Yes, she had a bit more time on her hands. But still, she's getting leaner and leaner. Still, she's getting hungrier and hungrier. And it feels like she's bleaching out. Yes, it feels like she's bleaching out. The hunger is so constant. Sometimes it's all she's aware of. She starts to forget where she's come from, because the air up there is so pure. It's so fine. She's becoming lithe and light, able to hop boulder to boulder. All the time, the hunger grows. But it's not just a hunger, not just a hunger for food. She has almost enough of that. But it's rather also a hunger to know her true self. It's a hunger to know her true self. And still she travels, and still she travels, and something leads her higher up into the mountain. Something leads her higher up into the mountain, and now the water is even more pure, the air is even more refined, and there's less and less to eat. And so now she's bleaching out, and she's hungry, and she's thin, and she's lithe. Until one day she looks down, and she has hooves instead of feet. And up from the hooves, she has the whitest, whitest legs that are from a deer, not a human. And she has become the white deer. And in that moment, she sees walking towards her, herself, her human self walking towards her, there coming up the path. And she thinks, what shall I do? How can I tell her that it's me? She doesn't know what to do. She just lays down in the grass. And the girl comes and she lies down with her. And the two of them, they lie there together and they tell stories. They tell stories. And sometimes it's the girl speaking, and sometimes it's the deer. And they tell stories that have always been told, that have been told for all eternity, there to remind people of who they really are. And the morning comes, and the morning comes, and the fire is ash now, white ash. And the girl, she wakes up, and the white deer is gone. The girl, she wakes up, and the white deer is gone. She thinks, did I dream that? Or was that real? And I don't know how it happened, because right there, her feet start to drag her down the mountain. It's like her feet just know it's time to go home. And so she walks, but as she walks, she's thinking, did I just dream that all? Did I really meet the white deer? Did I just imagine all that? Maybe I don't know my true self. Maybe I don't. But still her feet, they take her down. But it must have been the white deer that she met. And I'll tell you why. It was then, because after that, nothing could faze her or trouble her in the same way that it had before. Somehow she always knew who she really was. She always knew who she was. That purity, that beauty, that knowing that had been there in the mountains, it never left her. It never left her. And from that moment forth, she was unshakable in that beauty. And the old guy comes to the end of his story, and the inventor stares at him. He says, I don't think I can retell a story like that. Then the old guy says, well, come on then, we'll both go together. And so they do. And so they do, walking back through the city, walking back to the inventor's place, sleeping overnight, and the following morning they go to see the girl. And when she hears the story, she says, well, that's a very nice story, but I'm not that girl, that's not me. Then, says the old guy, I need to tell you more stories. And so he does. He comes every day, and the inventor comes too. And he tells stories. So many stories that the listening of them brings you back to a remembering of who you really are. Until after a few weeks, why, the girl, she says to the inventor, I can hear my thoughts, but I don't believe them anymore. I can hear my thoughts, but I don't believe them anymore. That's not who I am. Silence ruled there. Silence